When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Sunday Skate with Scott McLaughlin, Andrew Razor Raycroft, and Bridget Prue on WEEI.
Crowd appreciates the effort. And the Bruins getting back into better form. 3-0-1 in the last four. Marchand, career goal number 399. Ullmark, another win.
As Sean McDonough just said there at the end of the ABC broadcast yesterday, Bruins getting back into form. 3-0-1 week. Two big wins over Toronto. Big 5-1 win over Pittsburgh on Saturday. Ultimately did blow the game against Edmonton on Tuesday, second night of a back-to-back, but held them to one goal in regulation. Top five offense. Four straight games that they have allowed just one goal in regulation. We'll be discussing that. We'll be talking trade deadline, obviously. They made two additions. Pat Maroon up front, Andrew Peak on defense. Rumors of other big moves, including Linus Ullmark, which we'll get into. He talked about that quite a bit yesterday. I'm Scott McLaughlin. Bridget Prue is here. Andrew Raycroft will be along shortly. Big game for his daughter this morning. So we'll get an update on that, too, when he arrives.
Yeah, playoff games, right? Playoffs this morning. 8 a.m. start.
Yeah.
An early start.
I know. You got to get them in. Yeah, Jim Montgomery was racing out of TD Garden yesterday to get to his son's playoff game. So, yeah, it is that time of year for youth hockey.
Also, on this, like, daylight savings morning,
it really feels more like
7 when your game starts at 8. And so anybody who's listening to us, Have a cup of coffee and help yourself wake up, because I'm in that mood right now, too, where I'm like, my eyes are, I got to try to keep them open. I'm not adjusted yet.
I was thankful that it was at least, it was an afternoon game. It wasn't the night game and then do the turnaround with daylight savings. So I still didn't get a great night of sleep, but that's just normal for me. So that's fine. But Bridget, let's start with how the Bruins are playing and how they now look after the trade deadline, because we now know this is the team. There wasn't a huge addition. They didn't go all in the way some of their rivals did. Well, you know, we can go around the league as today's show goes on and touch on what some other teams did, but they added, you know, some toughness, some grit. We'll see how much of an impact it makes, but they are playing better hockey too. And that's really what's most important.
Yeah, and before we were talking about, like, now we don't have the ability to talk about external solutions now after the trade deadline. So it's like, okay, you don't have a good bumper on the power play. Well, now you got to figure out who that is on your team. We're not talking about Elias Lindholm coming in. That was one of the rumors of a trade that didn't end up happening because one of the legs of the three apparently fell apart and Getzel goes to Carolina instead. But The sexier deals did not happen. The ones that everybody wanted to talk about, speculate about, because they were actually interesting and would have been bigger shakeups, fell through. We can get to why. But at the end of the day, the very first Sunday Skate we had to start our season, if you can call it that, was about Pat Maroon. We were talking a lot about adding toughness and how it wouldn't take a lot to get him, and they give up a conditional 6th-round pick, which the condition is that if Pat Maroon doesn't play a game in the playoffs, they don't get that either. So it's such a low-risk, almost no-risk situation that that's a no-brainer. Really, you bring in a veteran who's won several Stanley Cups and is tough. It's exactly what you're missing. Once Lucci leaves the lineup, you didn't have that really, truly, until you added Pat Maroon back.
Yeah. Pat Maroon's, you know, like you said, it's virtually no risk. They also gave up an AHL forward, Luke Toporowski, who, you know, maybe he cracks an NHL lineup, gets a call up at some point, but his production declined this year down in Providence. Didn't seem like he had too much of an NHL future. So, yeah, no problem with that deal at all. And Maroon had back surgery in early February, so that threw a wrench into maybe some of the interest, or, you know, whether he would get moved, how interested would teams be, what can Minnesota get back? Ultimately, like we said, they didn't get back much, and the Bruins take him on, and obviously you got to wait for him to get healthy here, but ideally he comes back late in the regular season. You get him into a couple games and see where he's at come playoffs. You know, if he can play, then yeah, he brings some Stanley Cup experience. You mentioned he won three Stanley Cups in a row. 2019, obviously beating the Bruins. Sorry to bring that up, but then back-to-back ones with Tampa in 2020 and 2021. Yeah, he's physical. He's big. He still, you know, can protect the puck, hold on to in the O-zone. He has a little bit of offense. He had 16 points in 49 games this season. So that's perfectly fine from a fourth liner.
An upgrade on the fourth line.
It's more than the Bruins have gone from a lot of their fourth liners, for sure. And they've been rotating so many guys in and out of those spots that absolutely, like, you might as well add that kind of experience. Made all the sense in the world. The trade for Andrew Peak, I'm not as much of a fan of. You know, I just think that's a bit of a project. And Don Sweeney basically acknowledged this on Friday. There's some rebuilding of his game that they have to do. He really fell out of favor in Columbus this year. He had been a regular for them, playing over 20 minutes a game for 2 years. This year is way down to 15-something and was getting healthy scratched a lot.
Yeah, he only played under 30 games so far this season because he was getting scratched, not because of an injury or anything like that.
Right, and on a team that's as bad defensively as Columbus, that's not encouraging. Yeah,
a team that isn't, you know, they're pretty far from ready to be a playoff contender. So if you're getting scratched from that decor, it's not a good sign.
But the Bruins obviously believe there's more there than he's showing. You know, he was a second round pick, so like there's been some upside. He's big, again, 6'3", physical. He hits people, he blocks shots. So you're gonna have to make sure you get the best out of him. And you know, he has 2 more years after this, so that's, if you do get more out of him, that's a plus, because now you have basically your third pairing right shot defender locked up for a couple years, and you have something there. If you don't get more out of him, though, and he continues to struggle, now that creates a little bit of a problem where you have that contract and you're kind of locked into that, or you're trying to move him or whatever. But I know what the Bruins saw in him. I get it. Like, that makes sense.
Well, yeah, if you're going to comp him to anyone, like, he's more of a Derek Forbert style player.
Yeah.
And who goes on IR.
And probably more naturally physical, like more of a hitter than I think Forbert is. So yeah, I get it. I just think there is some risk there, and probably more than I would have been willing to take.
Well, but here's the thing. You say he went out of favor in Columbus. Well, the guy that the Bruins traded to get him, Jacob Zboril, had gone out of favor in Boston. So, and I know you also traded a third round pick because Peak is more NHL ready, I guess you could say, at this point. Zboril has been out of the NHL for quite a bit. Hasn't been an impactful player for Boston. So, I mean, you're trading two guys that have fallen out of favor in different organizations and hoping that they get a fresh start. It's one of those kind of deals, like new atmosphere, new start, hopefully, for both guys to boost themselves up.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the return. Like you said, Zboril hasn't been able to find himself in the NHL. And, you know, it's easy to play the what-if game and wonder, you know, what would have happened had he not torn his ACL a couple years ago, because it looked like he was starting to figure it out at the NHL level. He was playing pretty well at that point. That happens, and, you know, I really feel like he just hasn't been the same since, so.
I agree. He was starting to play that preseason and early season that year. He was on track to earn a top six spot, like, not as the extra D. Like, he was on track at that point in time, but he hasn't. You know, he's come up, he has made the same mistakes and sent back down. And so it was pretty clear that in Boston, his time was already up. Like, the writing was on the wall for him a while ago. So he's somebody that you're willing to move and hope that someone values him at the level that, like, his ceiling could be, but not what we've seen in the NHL so far.
Yeah, and the third-round pick in 2027, don't care about. Like, that's so far off. Not worried about it. You know, for me with Pete, though, it's more just the financial commitment of having two more years on that contract at $2.75 million. That's real third-pairing defenseman money. Like, that's...
It's not Weatherspoon money.
No, which, by the way, they also signed him to an extension. Well-deserved, and I love that. Like, Parker Weatherspoon is the perfect third-pairing slash seventh defenseman. He can play either side. He just plays a really simple, effective game, so... That made a lot of sense.
He's going to make less than half of that contract that you're talking about with Peak.
Yeah, less than a third.
Yeah.
Because the other news on the blue line, and I think a big part of the reason why they went out and got Peak is that Derek Forbert's most likely done for the season. That was announced on Friday. He was put on long-term injury reserve. He's been battling injury all season. Don Sweeney said at least one of them is going to require surgery. So... That's the end of his season. He's a free agent after the year. You would imagine probably the end of his time in Boston. You know, I guess we'll see, but they probably let him walk in free agency. So they did need another defenseman in that mold. So that's where Pete comes in. There are a few of those guys who got moved. Toronto loaded up on them with, like, Joel Edmondson and Ilya Lyubushkin, which, again, whatever. I think these are all depth guys who ultimately – You know, if your Stanley Cup hopes are coming down to what you get from an Andrew Peak or Joel Edmondson, you're probably already in trouble. So it's fine. But bigger picture than the individual guys, Bridget, just how do you feel about how this team stacks up? Because we did see Carolina makes big deals. You mentioned Jake Guentzel. Rangers added probably more quantity than quality. They made a bunch of deals. Really to improve their depth mostly. In your division, Florida Panthers go and get Vladimir Tarasenko. Pretty big deal there. So mentioned Toronto with depth. Just where do the Bruins stack up? How do you feel about their chances going forward now?
Well, they're better, but they're not, like, significantly better. Like, you might not even see Peak play. So that really means that, or if he does, you know, only a few games here and there. We're not thinking he's going to be an everyday in the lineup kind of guy. So if you think about it that way, and I know Maroon's hurt right now, but once he gets healthy, he should be in the lineup every day, you would think. He's really the only guy that you added that you're going to be leaning on in the playoffs. So they got better for sure because they needed that physicality, but not like to a huge extent where it's like where you're looking at a Jake Guentzel, where you're looking at, and so say Elias Lindholm, if they had been able to pull that off. That's when you're going, okay, that was a big move, and that really helps their top six forwards. And I think that when you watch what Vegas did and you watch what Colorado did, you feel like there's more to be desired if you're a Bruins fan watching what they were able to add. But you do understand that they didn't have a lot to move. They didn't have a way to add because of cap, because of not having the draft assets. So it's understandable that they weren't able to do anything huge, but you look at those other teams, like Vegas had a ridiculous deadline, and they are almost not even in the playoffs. They might not even make the playoffs somehow. Over the last few weeks, they've slipped to the second wild card spot.
Yeah, well, the somehow is that Mark Stone and Jack Eichel got hurt.
And other teams in the conference start playing better.
Yeah, but yeah, so I found it interesting. Like, I was looking at Stanley Cup odds, and because standings wise, Bruins still second in the NHL, 1 point behind the Panthers for the best record. But betting odds, they're eighth among Stanley Cup favorites, and there were three Eastern teams ahead of them: Florida, Carolina, Rangers, and then five from out west. I think it was Vegas, Colorado, Dallas, maybe Vancouver, and I don't know, someone else. But anyways, that feels to me like a much more accurate reflection of where they are. Like, they're probably around the eighth best team in the NHL on paper. That so that makes you an underdog.
I mean, that you can't argue with that. Yeah, on paper, yeah. The eighth, but they don't have Bergeron anymore. They don't have Krejci anymore. They weren't able to fill in their holes as well because they had cap issues that carried over from last season. So, yeah, on paper, I don't think people would argue with you that the Leafs are better on paper. Panthers are better on paper. If everyone on Vegas is healthy, they're better on paper. Colorado. So, yeah, you can't argue with that.
Yeah, I will say I absolutely ranked them ahead of Toronto, especially after this past week with 4-1 wins.
On paper, in terms of, like, their firepower.
Sure, but that's only one part of the
Yeah.
Defensively and goaltending, Toronto still struggles. So,
and it's amazing to me that when they do add defensemen, trade deadline after trade deadline, it never seems to be the right guy.
No,
it just never works.
It's like they're just spinning a wheel and, like, throwing a dart and being like, this defenseman. All right, let's try that.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, it
they already
work.
Did
okay.
Ilya Lyubushkin once. Like, they already had him, and then they let him go, and now they're like, yeah, we'll bring him back. Sure.
Didn't work last time, but.
Yeah. So.
The definition of insanity, Scott.
Yeah.
Which just applies to Toronto, it feels like, way too often.
Yeah, it's always the same problems with them. Yeah, so right now, that's who the Bruins would face in the first round, would be Toronto. I would absolutely pick them to win that series, but then I would say, if you're looking at Florida in the second round, Bruins look like a pretty big underdog. Like, that Florida team is better, more talented, more complete than last year's Florida team. And
which is scary. It should scare Bruins fans.
Yeah, and the Bruins obviously aren't. So, it's a lot. We'll get into more of that, how they stack up, what we think their chances are going forward. We're going to get into Linus Ullmark as well, because there were reports that he had blocked a trade. So we'll get into that, what we think it might have been, how this works with Linus Ullmark going forward, what he had to say about it after yesterday's game. You can join in.
I think he gave maybe the most real interview we've ever gotten from him. He's a guy that doesn't usually share a lot, but you could tell he was happy to get it off his chest a little bit. So we'll definitely show you some of that.
Yeah, we'll play some of that next.
We're back to Sunday Skate on WEEI.
Linus, any comment on the reports that you utilized your no-trade clause?
I'm just very happy to be here. This is the team that I want to be in. I'm very fortunate to be a part of this group. And, you know, ever since day one, I loved it here. So I'm very happy with where I am right now.
That was Linus Ullmark talking about reports that he had used his no-trade clause to block a deal. Kevin Weeks of ESPN was the first one to have that on Friday. Said on ESPN that he had heard the Bruins were close to a deal involving Ullmark, and that he basically invoked his no-trade clause because of geography, is what he cited, what Kevin Weeks cited.
Do you have to give, like, a specific, like is there only a certain number of reasons that count? Or, like, can you give any reason?
No, you can give any reason.
That's what I thought, but, yeah, like, so do you have to? Like, it's definitely more than just geography.
Yeah, so Ullmark has a 16-team no-trade clause, and I think how it works is either he had already submitted the list to the Bruins. Like, I think guys submit them before every season. The Bruins, if they thought they had a deal with a team that's on that no-trade list, they can ask Ullmark if he's willing to alter the list, waive it for this team, and if what Kevin Weeks is reporting is true, it sounds like the answer was no. He wasn't going to change his list. Frank Saravalli of Daily Faceoff tweeted that he heard something was close with the Los Angeles Kings, which that would make sense in terms of the geography part of it. You know, maybe Ullmark just doesn't want to go out west, which there are European players who don't want to, because East Coast, obviously a much shorter flight to their home countries, whether it's
less time change.
Yeah, whether it's them going back to visit, family visiting them, the time change you mentioned, family just watching games back home. But yeah, there's all kinds of reasons for why someone might not want to go to a certain team or city. That, you know, it could be the quality of the team. You know, is it a winning organization? You know, climate, tax laws. Like, these are all
tax
things, like,
laws.
I swear to God.
I know, like, I know. Like,
that's what makes the Florida Panthers
exciting. I know,
exciting.
I was going to say, like, hey, let's go play in Florida.
Yeah, that you get sunshine and no income tax. Like, that's why guys want to go to Florida.
I'm in. Scott, let's take this show on the road.
Hey, I will be. I'll be down in Florida a couple weeks when the Bruins are down there.
Yeah, looking, that's right. Can yeah. I come with you?
I'm looking forward to some sunshine.
Yeah.
Which means I'll probably just hit, like, rain every day. So
I don't know if your skin can handle that much sunshine.
No, yeah.
You're Irish, right? So.
Yeah, I'm going to park. I'll go for like a nice 10-minute walk along the boardwalk, and then I got to get back inside.
I like to imagine you wearing like that kind of sunblock that's like almost like whitish purple, and it's just covering your whole face. Just like, gotta be careful with the sun, guys. That's you.
Yeah. All right, but before we get more into Allmark, I want to go to Marie in Watertown, obviously our weekly leadoff caller. Have some questions about the new acquisitions. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning to both of you. I do. I think we somewhat know where Pat Maroon will get slated in, but I'm more curious about Peak and where he might get slated in defensively with this group, and who could potentially, you know, find themselves maybe viewing the game from elsewhere. And when Razor does get in, you need to ask him, please, what the over-under that Christian Fourier will actually call in to Sunday Skate.
Oh, I
morning.
Was told that he was going to call in, and I was told by the producer of that show, my friend Nick, and I was like, do you think he remembers? At first, I was like, I don't know if he's even going to be up. It's daylight
right.
savings.
I was going to say, I can already tell you what the excuse is going to be. It's going to be, oh, I lost track of the daylight savings. Yeah.
Bridget, unless you made sugar cookies, there's no way you're going to get a call.
Yeah,
from,
you have to bribe him to do anything Florian. Like that. Exactly. Yeah. But he did. Yeah. He was mad that Razor came back at him a little bit. So I think they played some of that for him on his show, and he was like, he was mad that Razor was going at him.
Yeah.
And just one more question. Do you think we've seen the last of Sidney Crosby in a Penguins uniform? You know, he didn't mince any words about his demeanor after, you know, the Penguins traded his best friend, was not very good. And he, you know, didn't seem as engaged in the game yesterday as he's been throughout the season. He's maintained a really high level of play, and I wonder if he's starting to think about, you know, do I want to deal with pretty much a full rebuild at this point in time? So
especially if they
get
rid of Sullivan too. Like, I've heard that they might fire that, like, his head coach, and that he's been with forever, and that would probably factor in as well.
Yeah. Then thanks, Maria. Well, let's start there, and then we'll circle it back to the Bruins. Yeah, it's been two tough games for the Penguins since Thursday night, while the trade was going down, they lost 6-0. And then they come into Boston, and, you know, first period competitive, 0-0, but they end up losing 5-1. Clearly a team that's out of it this year. They sold sold a big piece in Jake Guentzel, as Maria mentioned, has been a longtime line mate of Sidney Crosby and a close friend. Crosby had said before that what happened with Guentzel ultimately would not affect his own future. And he has made comments in the past about being a Penguin for life, and he's going to retire a Penguin, which I still think is the most likely course, but this is going to be a huge offseason because, to Maria's point, he's not going to endure a complete rebuild. Like,
he could Tom Brady it. I don't see why he would, like, it's got to be in consideration for him, right? You spend most of your career with this one team that you've had success with and won championships with, and then you think to yourself, I only have two good years left. I got to go somewhere else. I'm not happy here. I could see him pulling a Tom Brady.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. It seems very unlikely to me. Like, he is so ingrained in that organization and that city, it would be.
So was Brady. That's why it's a good comp.
Yeah, he was. And, you know, and I do think Crosby has probably several more years. He is still playing at a very high level this season. So, very interesting to think about. My guess is he's going to see what they do this offseason. They're going to try to do a quick retool on the fly and be a playoff team next year. Now, that's also what they tried to do this year.
Yeah.
They took a big swing with the Erik Karlsson trade. And, you know, Erik Karlsson's actually played pretty well this season, but overall, obviously that team mix has just been off. They haven't had depth. They just...
Their goaltending has been...
It's been up and down. At times it's been solid this year, but yeah, it's...
But you, like, it's not playoff, like, playoff run, like, long, like, Stanley Cup championship run solid. It's not that.
Yeah,
and that was another player that, not to, this isn't a Pittsburgh Penguins show, but to go back to another trade that Crosby wasn't happy about, like, Marc-Andre Fleury leaving, that was his best friend at the time. Like, he was not happy that Fleury was not back with the Penguins, too, so.
Yeah, these guys all... They get used to that. Like, they know it's part of the business.
You're I'm not sorry, be able to, but that, like...
I mean, he's had Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang as his teammates for, what, 18,
yeah, but
Marc-Andre
Fleury is one of my favorite human beings, so I would have been devastated if Marc-Andre Fleury was my best friend and he got traded away, which that is my dream, is to have Marc-Andre Fleury as my best friend, but...
That's also why the Wild aren't trading him, because Bill Guerin is also, like, best friends with Marc-Andre Fleury.
He's the best.
And he just doesn't want to move him.
Every day, there's just a video of him doing something hilarious that I'm... Or, like, just, he's a nice person, too. Sometimes he does some, like, some things you're like, okay, that's actually heartwarming. One day, someone called him old, so he showed up to practice with a cane instead of a stick and was using a cane as his goalie stick, which was hilarious. Anyway... This isn't Pittsburgh Penguins hour,
yeah.
But...
So let's get into Maria's question about where Peak especially slots. So Maroon, yes, we know he's going to be part of the fourth line mix, most likely left wing. So, you know, either Lauko draws out or Lauko flips over to the right side, which he's played plenty. Maybe Brazeau draws out. I think the most interesting thing there will be whether a fourth line with Pat Maroon on one wing and Justin Brazeau on the other would work, because... You're down a lot of foot speed, if that's the line. Those are two big bodies, for sure, that can get to inside ice, protect the puck, all that. But two guys who are on the slower side by NHL standards. On defense with Peak, I think Jim Montgomery did say he wants to get him into games pretty quickly. He also said, you know, they might want to get him at least one practice first, which... Maybe that rules out Monday, because the Bruins are off today. They don't have practice on Sunday. They'll have a morning skate Monday. I don't know if that'll be enough to get them ready for a game Monday night, or otherwise you're looking at probably Thursday in Montreal for his debut. But I think you're probably going to see some rotation with Kevin Shattenkirk. Shattenkirk has rotated in and out quite a bit anyways this season. And, you know, right now the Bruins have balance on defense. They have four left shots, four right shots, so I think you'll see some rotation in both spots. You saw Parker Weatherspoon draw out of the lineup on Saturday with Hampus Lindholm coming back, which was another big development, you know, worth getting to at some point today, because you saw him have some jump and make an impact right away. He had two assists.
Yeah, he had a really nice play on the DeBrusk goal to set that up. And yeah. And you know, it was more like you also... Absence makes the heart grow fonder. Like, when he was out of the lineup and you were seeing where they were deficient, you're like, oh, I bet Hampus Lindholm could have made that play. And when you have him back, it's sometimes people take him for granted. I know some people get on him a little bit. I tend to not. I know he's got a really high ceiling. He doesn't play up to it at times. But in terms of guys you trust back there, it's like McAvoy, Carlo, Lindholm would be the three that anybody should say they're most comfortable with, that make the fewest mistakes, solid defensively, and Lindholm is great in transition. And so having him back and healthy is huge.
Yeah, and putting him back with Carlo gives you that shutdown pairing again that, you know, on Saturday they used against the Crosby line. Maria mentioned, you know, Crosby was pretty quiet. Well, maybe, yeah, he's not fully engaged or he's out of it or whatever. Part of it's also that Lindholm and Carlo is a really good defensive pairing. The coil line with Marchand and DeBrusk also got a lot of that matchup. So now you have that pairing that can handle those tough assignments, and that frees up, you know, whether it's Grizzlick and McAvoy or Lauri, wherever he's in the lineup, you can get your more offensive defensemen into more offensive situations, into more favorable matchups, and Lindholm and Carlo can handle those tough minutes. So, yeah, it's a huge to have him back.
Yeah, and he was one of Sweeney's best trade deadline moves, the sign and extend.
Yeah,
that was huge, and he's been here now for this is his third year.
Yeah, they got him. Yeah, deadline of 22. Yeah.
He's been impactful. I know he had a tough playoffs last year, but he was playing with a fractured foot. So it explains some of the hesitancy you saw in his game. But to go to the forward stuff, like, he's on long-term IR. I wonder how much pain he was playing through and how much of this was, like, brand new. But I feel like it's been around for a while. Like you said, it's two different injuries. But I think they were having him play through, like, somewhat significant of an injury to need the surgery. And you could tell that he wasn't 100% himself either. I know we were saying his play declined. Well, that's probably a big part of the reason was because he was not as mobile and he was in pain or what have you. So I know people get on him as well, but that's a good enough reason that he was playing poorly. And
yeah, we have a text here from 508. Can you explain this team's obsession with Derek Forbert? They let him play through what we now know was multiple season-ending injuries despite increasingly poor play. He goes on a little bit.
This second part is also good. I'm infuriated by the trade for basically you're replacing Forbert with the opposite-handed version of him for 2 years, like a worse version of him for 2 years.
Yeah, and this is a good question. Why not put him on LTIR a month earlier and use the $3 million to make an earlier trade or bring up Beecher and, you know, and his face-off percentage? The money part is worth touching on because all along we were saying Bruins have no cap space. Anyone that they're going to bring in, they have to move money out. Well, when you put Forbert on long-term IR and his season's going to be over, you now have $3 million to use. And with the way, pretty much every big deal that got made, there was retained salary somewhere. Some 50%, a couple up to 75%, where you get a third team involved to take part of it. So you can get a really good player with under $3 million in cap space. So that's fair. Now, the Bruins still don't have many assets. They don't have a pick in the first three rounds this year. They don't have a great prospect pool. So that's still part of it. And to get to get salary retained, you often have to give up an extra pick somewhere. So the asset part of it was still a hurdle for this team. The money part of it, yeah, Forbert on LTIR freed up money you needed in order to bring someone in. And they end up using it on Andrew Peak, who is $2.75 million. So that's basically, $3 million for Forbert, $2.75 million for Peak. Not as impactful of a trade as I think a lot of people would have wanted.
Well, I mean, my dad called me. He goes, who is this? Like, who is this person? Like, it's not a big name. It's not. And it's also not somebody that was on anyone's radar until it happened.
Yeah, his name had been out there for a long time. It was him and actually Jesper Bogqvist's brother, Adam Bogqvist, in Columbus. They were probably going to move one of them. I didn't put him on when I did my list of deadline targets for WEI.com. I didn't put him on there because I thought if the Bruins were trading for a defenseman, get someone who is more impactful than that. As for why they played Forbert so long, I think they felt like they owed it to themselves and to him to see where he could get to by the trade deadline. If there was a chance that he was going to be able to play through it, get a little healthier, have it heat, whatever, and, get his game back, they wanted to give him all the runway that they could for him to do that. Because, again, it was a long time ago, and I know people forget this or maybe didn't even notice, but Forbert actually was playing pretty well to start the season. He had a pretty good start this year. Like, for Forbert, for what he is, he was doing his job well.
And then the
weren't you on the Forbert train earlier in the year? You're like out there tweeting all his analytics.
I don't know if I was on the Forbert train.
But you were like, hey, look at these analytics. These are, everybody should look at these. And Forbert's doing good.
He's still, even now, has been on the ice for fewer high danger chances on a per 60 minute basis than any other Bruins defenseman, which is hard to believe when you see how he was struggling, especially in recent weeks. But statistically, like, that remains true.
I guess the better person to ask this question to, can you explain the team's Derek Forbert obsession, would be Razor. Because Razor, when we brought up Forbert's role last week, the week before, like, he even said you could probably get value for him in a trade, which is, like, obviously when he's injured, that sounds kind of crazy. But Razor and other goalies probably look at this a different way and more similarly to the way the Bruins look at it, which is, like, his qualities that he does have defensively are something that maybe people don't understand. I don't know. We'll have Razor speak to the Forbert stuff, hopefully, when he gets in. He texted us his daughter's game went to overtime. So good luck to her. Hopefully she, and I don't think she's a goalie. So
yeah, we'll have to get the full breakdown when Razor gets in. But yeah, with Forbert, it was that they didn't have to make this decision earlier than trade deadline time. Like, I guess if you want to say, had they done this earlier, you know, could they have been a player for Chris Tanev, who went to Dallas? But again, you're giving up premium assets to get a Chris Tanev. So it ultimately, that was the biggest hurdle, was, you know, are they going to give up another first round pick when they've already been? Now, I know Tanev didn't go for first round pick, but Calgary did get a young player that they really liked. So you could match it with that. You know, who would that be? Is that Mason Lorai, who's playing well for you right now?
I think he was off the table completely.
I think he probably should have been. But, like, that's who Calgary might have been looking for. Knowing they're also losing Noah Hanifin, you imagine, like, they'd want a defenseman. They got another one from Vegas that they liked in the Noah Hanifin trade. So you probably would have to give them a young defenseman that they liked. And if you're looking at the Bruins prospect pool and young players, that's Mason Lorai. Like,
that's really the only defenseman prospect that I can think of that people would be interested in at that level to get you a Hanifin.
Right.
And by the way, Vegas.
Or even Tanev. Like, yeah. Tanev, you were going to have to give up, at least, whether it was a first round pick or a top prospect, there was going to have to be one, you know, pretty high end asset in there. So I think they wanted to give Forbert a chance, and ultimately he wasn't able to get there. And the injury does end up being season ending. And so now he's on LTIR, and they made a depth move for Peak to round out their defense. They go eight deep now, which we know Don Sweeney likes having that depth. That's important because every year in the playoffs, someone's going to get hurt on the blue line. It's just almost a guarantee, you know, but there are still questions of, like, is your top four good enough? You have guys who can rotate in and out on the third pair, no problem.
Well, I guess that depends on your idea of if Grizzlick is strong enough in the top four.
Or if Mason Lorai gets there. But, you know, do you try him with Charlie McAvoy at some point here down the stretch? So, lots to get to. We got sidetracked to defense. We still have more Ullmark to get into.
Yeah, wait. We started this segment talking about Ullmark about 1 minute, and then we took Maria's call and we forgot.
Pretty much just the cut coming in was Ullmark.
Yeah. Right. Well, we do want to talk about him, though. I have more to say about some of the comments he made.
Well, this is the benefit of having 2 hours. We can, you know, stuck gets bumped back.
We'll get there.
If Razor's daughter's game goes to overtime, that's fine. Like, we're still going to have him. So, call in with your thoughts on all of this, on what the Bruins did at the deadline, how you feel about them now, what you think of the Ullmark report of him reportedly blocking a trade. Call in 617-779-7937. Text us 37937. We'll be back after this.
We're back to Sunday Skate on WEEI.
The trade deadline is over and that put all that behind.
No, thank God, yes. No, it's tough. I mean, you try to act tough beforehand. You know, you don't want to show anything. want to show any emotion. It's kind of like in a playoff situation as well, but it is tough on players. And this is the first time when I had to go through and actually being rumored about. I've always felt safe, you know, at different. But then once it actually starts picking up more and more and more, you hear those outside noises. It takes a toll on you, and then there's this emotional part of it, and then you start thinking about your family, and then there's all these questions that you just don't have any answers to. So, yes, I am very happy that it's over with, and I'm very glad and happy to be here.
There's more from Linus Sallmark after Saturday's game, where, by the way, he made a season-high 38 saves, so... big game for him. Little extra long goalie hug with Swayman afterwards. You could tell Swayman was saying something to him, and you could see, like, in the close-up video that Swayman was, like, pointing to the ice as if to say, like, you stayed here or you're still here or something like that. And Allmark said Swayman had some really nice words for him during that hug. He also talked about how on Friday he had a conversation with Patrice Bergeron. He said Charlie McAvoy sent him a nice text that meant a lot to him. So clearly, Linus Allmark very happy to still be here. I think the Bruins players all very happy to still have him. Jim Montgomery said after the game that he was glad Allmark's still a Bruin. No doubt he's popular in that room and loved in that room. Obviously, the question is, you know, are the Bruins a better team with him still here, or would there have been a trade that might have made them better?
It depends who they were going to get from, I say, Los Angeles, which is the team that it sounded like was the most likely destination for him. What would they have added there?
So there's maybe a couple target. We don't know, first off. This is just speculation. I didn't see anything reported on what the return might have been. But if you look at center, there's Pierre-Luc Dubois, who has not worked out very well in L.A. They made a big trade to get him from Winnipeg over the summer.
Yeah, he's not doing great on my fantasy team either.
Yeah, I would probably just drop him in fantasy.
Yeah, no, he ain't been playing.
That I would not have liked. I would not take that chance on Pierre-Luc Dubois, who is talented, is still pretty young, but there's a reason things weren't working in Winnipeg. There's a reason they haven't worked in L.A. That's just...
feels like too much of a risk to take.
Yeah, and he signed for 6 more years, I think. Like, that's a lot. I would not have loved that. Two players.
Plus, isn't he someone that people talk about as they like not necessarily the best guy in the room, or like there might be issues with that?
Yeah, people. I don't know if there's been anything concrete, but people speculate about that. Earlier this season, Drew Doughty, the captain of the Kings, had some comments about. I forget exactly what the wording was, but it basically calling out some of his teammates saying, you know, there's guys in here who think they're good or think we're good and they're kidding themselves, something like that. And there was a lot of speculation that people thought he was maybe talking about Dubois.
And that he's yeah, and that he's kind of more of an individualistic guy, not focused on team goals, more on his own and stuff like that. I've heard, and that's not just with L.A., that goes back to before. So that just seems like too big of a risk, and for a questionable upgrade, right? Because when we talked to Razor about trading Allmark, it was like, it has to be a discernible, non-risky, I guess you could say, upgrade, like Elias Lindholm.
Yeah. Now, a couple players in L.A. that would interest me a little more, whose names kind of sort of popped up a couple times, Adrian Kempe. Really good winger, 51 points in 58 games this season. That would interest me. I believe he has another year after this. Matt Roy, really good right shot defenseman, top four guy. Now, exactly how that fits when you already have McAvoy and Carlo on your right side, I mean, the easy answer is it just gives you maybe the best right side in the NHL. But how the minutes would divvy up would be interesting. But he's a really good player. Who would interest me. He is also a pending free agent, though, so, you know, would there be an extension or how would that work? But, yeah, so there are a couple guys there that could have been interesting. We know New Jersey checked in on Linus Allmark, too. They checked in on every goalie and ultimately got rid of their two goalies that they had, and they brought in Jake Allen and Kaapo Kähkönen, which I think is pretty underwhelming for what they were aiming for. But they
at least made a move at the position they knew they needed to do something about, like take a risk, try something new.
Yeah, and it probably gives them, you know, they get a little bit of time to evaluate those guys and figure out if they want them part of the plan going forward. I still think they're going to be looking for a bigger upgrade in the offseason. I wouldn't be surprised if they circle back on both Jacob Markstrom in Calgary and Linus Ullmark.
I wonder if Linus Ullmark would have vetoed a New Jersey trade.
Well,
I don't want to live in Jersey.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, we just don't know what his list is. At least you would think that would fit geographically. Like, that's another East Coast team, so maybe not. Maybe they're not on his list. Who knows? But
I mean, he wants to be on an actual legit cup contender this year. Like, going to L.A., that's not what would happen. Like, he wants to win a Stanley Cup.
And I mean, the Kings are a pretty good team.
Yeah, I don't...
Like,
I think they're
in a loaded conference, but yeah, they're going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, but I think he knows that he in Boston, first of all, he's got such good friends here that definitely factors in. But in his mind, this team gives him the best chance to win the Stanley Cup, I think. I don't think he looks around the league and goes, I'd rather be on that team. He doesn't. He wants to be with the Bruins. He said that. I think he feels his fit is good here. Culture is good here. I don't think he ever wanted to go anywhere else. So maybe it's fortunate for him that potentially the Devils and the Kings were the teams that were interested and were probably on his no trade list, so that he didn't have to, say they wanted to trade him somewhere that he said he would go to. They don't have to ask him. He doesn't get a chance to veto. So the fact that it was one of those teams, first of all, it's a really awkward conversation to have. And you could tell by the sound of Ullmark's comments, he had some uncomfortable conversations recently, it sounded like. But he might not be here if it was, say, you know, I don't know, name another team that needs a goalie that might be on, might not be considered one of those 16 teams that he didn't want to go to. And they wouldn't even have had to have a conversation with about it. They could have just sent him out.
Yeah, I mean, I think goaltending's still a question in color. Like, if you're looking at contenders, Colorado still has questions there. They improved everything else about that team and are just going to hope one of their goalies gets hot enough come playoffs, or, you know, at least doesn't shoot them in the foot. But yeah, lots more to get to here. We're coming to the end of hour one. Hour two coming up. You can call in 617-779-7937. I have some thoughts on, can the Bruins win the Cup with Linus Ullmark staying put? And should they rotate goalies in the playoffs? Because that is now the big question, now that you know you're keeping Ullmark and Swayman together, at least through the end of the season. So we will get to that right after this break.
This is Sunday Skate with Scott McLaughlin, Andrew Razor Raycroft, and Bridget Prue on WEEI.
You don't talk about the goalie too much in a 5-1 win, but how instrumental was Linus today?
He was our best player. Wasn't close. He was really good. Glad he's still a Bruin.
That's Bruins coach Jim Montgomery after Saturday's 5-1 win over the Pittsburgh Penguins. Going out of his way to make mention of the fact that he's glad Linus Ullmark is still a Bruin, obviously referencing all the trade rumors that had surfaced.
Yeah, but is it even just referencing the trade rumors, or is it like referencing something he knew to be true? Like, sure, he could have gotten that from like the outside noise and but like maybe he knew something on the inside as well. Like, he probably,
yeah, I'm sure, like, obviously he has more information than we do.
Yeah, because he's not just on Twitter like talking about what people were saying on Twitter. Like, he knows how close it was potentially to happening.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, it is worth noting that we played the clip earlier when I asked Ullmark about, you know, did he care to comment on reports that he had utilized his no trade clause? He didn't answer. He just said he's glad to still be a Bruin. Don Sweeney didn't confirm anything either when he talked on Friday after the deadline.
Which GMs don't.
No.
They don't get into that. You, everybody, you know, you're a reporter, you have to ask the question. But they're not going to say, oh, yeah, you know, this was actually who we wanted to have, but we couldn't do it. Like, they don't answer like that.
Right. Every now and then from the tell with Sweeney or with Cam Neely is, like, if you ask them about a contract situation or, you know, you're making any progress with this player, like, if they say, like, we're optimistic that we're going to get something done, that kind of means, like, they are actually moving towards something. And by the way, he was asked about reports of Jeremy Swayman, because there's been reports that he's working towards an extension. There's been numbers thrown out there, you know, long term, like 8 years, potentially $7 million a year. You know, nothing really concrete there. And Sweeney sort of danced around that as well and said, you know, that he, as he said before, they want to get a deal done with Swayman. He said they want to get it done long before they get to where things ended up last summer, which
I don't think
a,
Swayman will allow that
yeah,
to get that far.
Which was obviously a contentious arbitration hearing that resulted in a one-year deal. So Swayman does need another new contract before next season. It seems like they're going to get something done. I don't know that it's as imminent as maybe, you know, some people have said, but I do think it'll get done long before we have to talk about, oh my God, is this going to go to arbitration again? I don't think that's going to happen.
No, and the other person we've been talking about, well, are we going to see them traded or extended at or around the trade deadline, was Jake DeBrusk. And he has no extension either, so he's a pending free agent. And last time his name came up in rumors at the deadline was when he got the extension. So I feel like both of those guys were, it made sense to extend them right around this time. I know now that the dust has settled a little bit for the deadline, maybe that's the next course of action to get those things done.
We'll see. Or do they take it to the end with DeBrusk and see how he finishes out this season and see if he can earn, you know, what he probably wants to get paid on his next contract? If he finishes strong and has a good playoffs, yeah, I think they're absolutely going to be open to keeping him. If
maybe you extend him now for a lesser price.
If that's an option. But if you're, I guess it depends on, like, what Jake DeBrusk's attitude is towards that. Does he want to do that because he just wants a new contract and he wants to know where he is and he wants to stay here? Or does he want to bet on himself to finish strong, have a good postseason, and make more money? Because this, DeBrusk at his age, where he is in his career, for most guys, like, this is where you get your biggest payday of your career. And that might not happen with him if he goes quiet down the stretch. Like, he might have to settle for less money, maybe shorter term, but a strong finish puts that kind of contract back in play where he can get, whether it's here or elsewhere, some long-term security and a nice raise. But right now, it would be hard to give him that. Now, he's played well recently. Worth noting, goal and an assist for him on Saturday. I think he's got 6 points in his last four games. So maybe this is the start of that heater where, you know, this next month leading up to the playoffs, he plays some of his best hockey. That's what you're hoping if you're both the Bruins and Jake DeBrusk, for sure.
Well, I talked to Mr. DeBrusk this week when he was in town for the Oilers game, and I asked him if he had any more of those coupons to give him, because when he brought that coupon out, it said goal and assist, or he has to do 20 push-ups, and he got a goal and assist, and Mr. DeBrusk said, I'm saving them for the playoffs. So he said, I got a drawer full of them. I'm going to give them during the playoffs. So got to get that motivation for him. It was a little bit awkward, that game on Tuesday against the Oilers, when his dad was in town for the broadcast, because that was when a lot of moves were happening, and I was just thinking, wow, this would be really bad if a trade gets announced and DeBrusk is out, because that was the same day the Lindholm stuff popped up.
Yep.
And his dad was in the building. I was like, this would be an uncomfortable situation if Jake DeBrusk gets traded and his dad's here, and this, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, he was, like you said, he was rumored to be part. Kevin Weeks threw it right out there and suggested that basically the three main pieces of that, well, there would have been a lot more pieces, I should say, but would have been Gensel to Vancouver, Elias Lindholm to Boston, Jake DeBrusk to Pittsburgh. Obviously didn't happen, and DeBrusk is still here. So I teased that I had a take on the goalie rotation, so I want to pay that off before we have
to... Oh, and Razor's almost here. So...
Yeah, so we will definitely get his reaction as well. But before we get to our next break, I got to get this out there. If both goalies play well down the stretch, and you just kind of went through a stretch where Swayman and Ullmark were both struggling a little bit after All-Star break, they have now both picked it up recently and have played well recently. If they are playing well down the stretch, keep the rotation in the playoffs. I thought that's what they should have done last year. I think it's what they should do now. Now, listen, if one of them's struggling and one's playing great, then yeah, you ride the hot hands. Like, duh. But if they're both playing well, all along you've said this is the strength of your team. This is how it's built. You rotate them. Don Sweeney this week said he thinks the rotation helps both of them because it keeps them fresh and they push each other. Keep it going in the playoffs. I think it was a mistake.
It takes pressure off. I feel like the Bruins were dealing with so much pressure last year. Everybody felt like they needed to be the guy. Like they all felt like they needed to do a lot. And when you have a rotation, you're sharing the load rather than feeling like you have to, you know, all the pressure's on you. I think it helps.
Yeah, and
but let's get these thoughts out before Razor gets here and totally disagrees with what we're saying.
Right, which I know he thinks the rotation is tough to do in the playoffs, and
I'm sure he's listening in his car right now.
We'll let him explain why. But for me, it's if you have something that's working in the regular season and you haven't done the other thing, don't change it up for the playoffs. Like, last year was mind-boggling to me because it was like, last year, Ullmark and Swayman were obviously even better than they've been this year. Ullmark wins the Vezina. Swayman was awesome, too. They were historically great, like, in terms of the goaltending the Bruins got last year. It was historic. And a big part of that was that you had one of them fresh every game, just going back and forth. And then you get to the playoffs and you try to ride Ullmark, who has never been a workhorse goalie for a deep playoff run, and neither has Swayman. So it's not like you can say, like, oh, well, he's done it before, so, you know, of course we trust him to. Neither one of them has done it before. What they have done for the last two seasons and even part of the season before that is they've rotated, and they've had a lot of success doing it. And I think there's going to be – at some point there are going to be more teams – that rotate in the playoffs anyways, because it is now the norm in the regular, like, a lot of teams rotate now in the regular season, whether it's strict every other game or, you know, maybe someone gets a couple starts in a row, but on the whole it balances out to 50-50 or 55-45. Someone's going to be bold enough to do it in the playoffs at some point, and it's going to work, and you're going to see the dam break. Why should that team not be the Bruins? Like, they have this luxury of riches at the position that other teams don't have. Why not use that in the playoffs? Why try the same thing that didn't work last year?
Yeah. No, that's the thing, is now that you do have both of them coming back, you didn't trade Ullmark, you have to find a way to maximize your use of him too. So to me it makes so much sense, but there are the people, like the more old school people, that just really I feel like they're closed-minded to the idea. Like, just no matter how much like people argue that with all these things that make sense, it's like, no, this is just not how we do it. It's not how we do it. We're not gonna change. And so you saw last season that there was this hesitancy to do it based on the history of the league and what playoff contenders have done in the past, but they had the perfect opportunity to do it last year, and I think they're set up for the same thing this season. And I'm with you again, the fact that they have both of them, you have to use them both. That's what I think, and Razor's gonna get here and say that's not good for, you know, their the mentality going in. But if that's been your mentality the whole season, then I don't see why that changes like during the playoffs. And that's another thing that it could take pressure off you, where it's like, okay, we're not looking at this in a different way. We're not trying something different. Like, this is what worked And sticking with something that worked during the regular season can make you feel more comfortable. Just it's in the back of your mind that you know it already worked.
Right. It's what they're used to.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And again, I'm not saying you have to stick with it the entire postseason, even if one of them's struggling. If one's struggling and one's playing great, fine. And the rotation, ride the hot hand. I'm saying to start.
Oh, here he is.
We got Razor.
Oh, I was listening. I was trying. My Prius couldn't go fast enough.
Because it's like, let's get these thoughts out before he gets here and totally disagrees with us.
I heard. No. Just a little disagree.
How'd she do? How'd your daughter do?
Oh, it was unbelievable. Overtime win, 3-2.
There we
go. Scored 6-on-5, 2 to tie it up. That's why I'm so late. Literally the overtime was 3-on-3. It went like 12 minutes to 4-on-3 kill. Like it was hilarious. It was so much fun. So,
all right,
I've got a final now. Who cares?
We got a lot to get Razor to react to. Deadline.
The fact that I almost ran him over this week.
Yes, that too.
Yeah. The fact that Bridget almost,
that's
killed
how
him.
Fast you were going faster in the parking lot than I was just going on the Mass Pike, by the way.
All right, but we do have to catch a break, so we got Razor in now, coming back after. Give us a call, 617-779-7937.
We're back to Sunday Skate on WEEI.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate. I'm Scott McLaughlin with Bridget Prue, and now with Razor as well. Razor, so daughter's team won, right?
Yes. Big victory, huge victory. Finals later today. So goalie Juliet stood on her head. Overtime win. So it was great. So
and your daughter scored
today. Yep, it was great. It was awesome.
You said the
great
finals day. Today.
Finals is 1:30. So back
wow.
to the rink right after this. Never
busy
ends.
Day. It's all
never
hot.
Ends.
Hockey all day.
Yeah.
Of course.
All weekend.
Yeah. Well, I'm out of here and I'm driving to Lowell to broadcast the PWHL game. So.
There you go. Big day.
More hockey
who do
for
they
me
got?
Too. New York.
All right, perfect.
Yeah, I got to watch a big Manchester City Liverpool game. So.
Oh, yes, that's
not
that's right.
Hockey,
that
Scott.
Is definitely
that is.
A big one. Yeah. That is definitely huge.
All right, so let's get Razor's reaction on a couple different topics, but Razor, where do you want to start? What's your overwhelming, whether it's deadline, takeaways, state of the team, or the goalie rotation discussion?
What did we say that made you angriest?
No,
there.
No, and you know, well, what it was the combination of Swayman's extension, 7 years, $8 million, and then Linus being possibly asked to move clause, then the rotation in the playoffs, and then trying to figure out who your goalie is in the summer. So how do you give someone who rotates in the playoffs a $7 million contract? That seems very difficult to me to do that. So how do you trade a guy if he's your goalie rotating in the summer as well? So I think I just, and then the other thing was, and this is the big one though. This is the big one because if one goalie's struggling, one goalie's hot in the playoffs, of course you're not going to rotate. But how long do you let that play out? Two games? Basically,
because
two games. So
two.
So yep. you're going, yep. so you're down 3-1 in the first round by going through the rotation twice. And that one goalie played really bad twice, and that's why you're down 3-1.
Well, not
that
so.
Hurt the coaches. That's the issue, is that, yeah, you want to, you say, the rotation until someone struggles, but we saw that last year where if you struggle for 4 days, you're out. That's
well,
all
if,
it takes.
Yeah. I mean, if you ended up down 3-1, that means someone's lost twice. So they're done. Then you're riding the other guy.
But then 3-1's in, but what if you're down 2-1 and the guy who played the really bad game has to go back in for game 4 and you do that and you lose 3-1. And you lose to go down 3-1, and then you, like, I guess the thing about going back to last season, right, is they were up 3-1. That was basically like the worst case scenario if you're a goalie rotation, goalie changer type person, because they were up 3-1. And then they lost two games, and they're like, oh boy, that's worst case scenario. Typically a series is going to go 2-2, or you're at 2-1 and it's this was 3-1 and it was kind of the worst case scenario if you're a person who wants to say rotation works or it doesn't work, because you couldn't take him out at that point. Like the hindsight that they were going to actually take Linus out after he played amazing in Florida at 3-1, it doesn't.
For me, the big second guess last year was going into game six after Allmark loses game five.
In overtime.
Yes.
Yeah.
With a mistake.
Yeah.
On him.
Oh, man. Sean McDonough yesterday said, Linus Allmark, great puck movement. And it just flashed in my mind that, like, I literally had a flashback to
imagine that, though, right? Like, and we're saying that in hindsight, but imagine being a coach and having your Vezina Trophy winning goaltender up 3-2 after making one bad play, one puck handling play, not even a goal that he, like, gave up from center ice, and making
but
that decision. So it's easy for us to do it. He hadn't
been regular season Allmark to that point in the series.
He was really good in 3 and 4. He was really good in game 3 and 4.
But I think in my mind, it wasn't just the one mistake in game 5. I thought he was a little off that whole game. I thought 1 and 2, he was okay. Game 6 to me is when I would have made the switch, and I'm whether it was on here or on the skate pod, like, you could find me going back and saying that. So that's not revisionist history for me, at least.
And if he really was dealing with an injury, then that makes the case stronger that maybe you should have made the move earlier. But are you surprised at all, Razor, that it seemed as close as it was for the Allmark deal, and that maybe the only thing stopping it was the fact that it was one of his 16 teams he wasn't willing to go to?
It seems, yeah, and this, it sounds like that's exactly what happened. You know, there's a lot of smoke on that one. And listen, that's collectively bargained. That's the player's prerogative. You have that in your contract for this exact reason. And you can choose to facilitate. I'm always, you know, as a former player, I want the player to have as much power, I guess, as possible. So certainly is prerogative to do that. I am interesting, you know, just say, I guess interesting what would have came back and what the whole the play was. That would be what I would really want to know. Was it to set up another deal? Was it just a straight up deal? Was it to open up cap? That I'm sure we will never know. But it is interesting. It's a very dramatic story. One I don't think I certainly didn't expect to get to chat about.
Yeah, how awkward is that conversation when your GM comes in, calls you, says, hey, would you go to LA? Like, we're trying to get rid of you.
Yeah, no, but listen, and I think as player, you always kind of feel like everyone's trying to get rid of you. You know, like, it's kind of part of the deal, especially from a young age. It's like you either play well or they're getting rid of you. So that is certainly awkward, I'm sure, a little uncomfortable. And of course, uncomfortable in like thinking about it and making that decision and feeling both sides, you know, both as a general manager, as a team, and as a player. And so, yeah, I'm sure but that can go away really quick. We saw that. Yes, I thought his mental toughness through all of that was very good yesterday. And it essentially goes away once we turn off the air here this afternoon. Like, they have a game tomorrow night, and then we're off and running. I don't think we're really going to look back at this until the summertime.
Sometimes, and this is just like, I don't know if maybe other people, I think a lot of people think of it this way. Sometimes when you're in a job and you feel underappreciated, it makes you work harder. Like, I've had different situations where I've had a boss be like, you did terrible that game. And then the next game I come out and I'm like angry and I do really well. You know what I mean? So I feel like that's what we were seeing from him. And sometimes you're just like, okay, I'm going to show you exactly why you didn't want to move me, like why you shouldn't have wanted to get rid of me.
And I would, it's like when I asked you guys what it was like relief. When you guys say relief, I this probably didn't just happen the day before the deadline. This has probably been kicking around a little bit longer than all of us knew about and all of us. So I think we kind of saw that as well, where it's, you know, that relief, and now I just get to play, and we'll deal with everything else going forward. So
yeah, and he said he talked to Bergeron about it, like how to deal with the noise of it, and he said Charlie McAvoy texted him after the fact that he didn't get traded, like tells you that his teammates knew he was going through something and you know needed a little bit of extra support.
Sure, yeah, guys would have known what was going on, and again, everybody, it's just what it is. Like I know it's like a simple cliche, simple, you know, kind of ridiculous answer, but it really is true that. And you just said it, coach yells at you. All of these guys are typically motivated by that. You don't get to the NHL by sulking about something that someone said to you or did something because you've been beaten down since the age of 11 over these things at this point. And it's the natural selection of getting to the NHL are the ones that are mentally tough enough to just play hockey. So yeah. I think this deadline, and we saw it this week, I think we saw it all week from this group that this needed to go away. The deadline is beneficial for them to go away, and they're only going to get better from this. And it was a huge week for them. The Leafs twice, that game against Edmonton, they were awesome.
Well, you were right about the Leafs fans, what they must think about the Bruins.
Oh, yeah, no.
They got it handed to them twice this week, and you have, like, I wish that I had, you know, Canadian TV. Yeah. I'll watch the, like, their talk shows in the morning, well, know that they're freaking out.
On Friday, I was like listening to some Toronto radio, both because of the deadline, because I knew like they'd be talking about it, but also because Bruins had just beat them for the second time in a week. And yeah, like it is great to
hear that. They're resigned to the fact.
Hey, that right now, that's your first round matchup if the season ended today. And I expect that is what it'll be. Like,
I
think the Panthers are probably going to win the division. They've been playing better. I know it's only 1 point, so that could go the other way, but Toronto has a pretty sizable lead over the wildcard teams for third place, even despite, you know, their tough week. So,
no one will ever say they want, like, no coach or player will ever say, oh, we want this team because it can come back to bite you. No one says it, but I think that Boston would rather draw Toronto than just based on the season series than a lot of the other teams out there.
You do have to guard against thinking that you have something on them. Like, Brad Marchand was asked about this after Thursday's game, and he made it very clear and, like, was borderline indignant about it, where he was like, no, regular season doesn't mean anything. Like, we don't have anything on them. It's totally different come the playoffs. Like, we better not think that. So that's what the Bruins' mindset is going to have to be if that is the matchup. But, you know, for us, we can sit here and say, like, matchup-wise, it does look like they have Toronto's number.
And Razor, it looked like that was one of the most physical. Like, Toronto brought the physicality out of Boston. They brought something out of them that we've seen missing through different portions of the season.
It certainly did. They did. That game did. That night did. I think having the 11 group in the building and around certainly charged everybody up a little bit more. I think they, part of that matchup you talk about is being physical against Toronto. And Toronto, to their credit, pretty much responded to that physicality, at least their bottom half of the lineup and their defense. You know, I didn't see Austin Matthews at all. Bertuzzi showed why he was wanted here last year, and he will be a difficult in the playoffs. We saw how good he was for the Bruins last year in the first round. He will be difficult in the first round for the Bruins. I think you can say that you look at everybody who the Bruins could play, as, you know, all the way down to the Washington Capitals, right? Just go break all the scenarios. Washington, Islanders, Detroit, Tampa, Philly, or Toronto. We really open up six teams. Those are the ones all of those matchups feel better than what the Florida Panther matchup was last season in the first round. Yeah, I feel like I can say that. That certainly doesn't mean that they can't lose to Toronto in six games. I mean, Toronto, that power play gets cooking. Matthews starts scoring. Marner, like, if those big guys go, they can be very formidable. They added a little bit of sandpaper. I love the fact the Bruins added Maroon. That just negates Reeves from running around and giving the extra face wipes on a nightly basis. It just negates that enough. And I think that's a direct, like, Pat Maroon to me is directly correlated to playing the Maple Leafs in the first round and the Florida Panthers in the second round for that matter.
Think about who he would be against in Florida.
Like now he gets to run around a little bit in Florida. If we want to go all the way to there, which we can do because we're on talk radio, you play that series, he gets to face wash Nick Cousins every single shift he's out on the
Cousins,
ice. And just gets right, like, no one can touch him on Florida. No one can fight him. No one can handle him.
We've seen that a little bit with that Florida. Like, I think of the game earlier this year where they were trying to get revenge on McAvoy and clearly seeking him out. And eventually Forbert drops the gloves with, I'm blanking on who it was, but that kind of put an end to it. Like, that sort of really quieted that game down. It's like Florida wants to me, they strike me as like a team that wants to push it to a certain extent, get under your skin after the whistle, hit on the forecheck. But if you start to push back, like, you can quiet them down. Like, I don't think they just keep taking it to another level. I think if you push back, like, it gets their attention.
But in the playoffs, it's different, too.
Sure.
The levels go further in the playoffs.
You get away with a little bit more. But you do... They do still call penalties nowadays in the playoffs. That's the kicker. That's just what Florida does. They get under skin. They're ratty at times, and it's just helpful to have them. I think it's a really shrewd play based on who you're going to face in the first couple of rounds of the playoffs.
I think he was the guy we were talking about on our first show as like kind of an easy, likely, low risk ad.
Yeah.
And they went for it, and
it was an easy one. And then the Andrew Peak, I didn't hear at the very start of the show, but you know, he's got term, which is interesting. Kind of sets up what the deal looks like next season, and
potentially without Forward.
Hopefully he can get to his defensive game with this Bruins. The Bruins pro scouting have done a great job, right? They have absolutely nailed these free agents and trades over the last couple of years on what players will fit in the system that they play. You hope that, and I think as a player, I think of a guy who is a defensive defenseman on a bad team defensively who wasn't going anywhere this season with a new coach at the end of the season, not a lot of structure, coming to a place like this that is the exact opposite, that has it dialed in, knows exactly where everyone's supposed to go, it should be a really good fit. He should be able to fit into a system like this and really elevate and look better because of what's going on around him, because of that center defensive mindset that the Bruins have. I get the sense that he's going to pop a little bit just in being really, really solid.
Yeah, I'll reset my take because this was, you know, an hour and a half ago, audience turnover. I didn't love the trade for Peak because I do think there's risk there, not in terms of what they gave up. Zaboral, they had clearly kind of run their course together. Third-round pick in 2027, I don't care about. But in terms of,
I'm glad you said that. Thank God. Yes. Nobody was worried about that third-round pick, right? Okay.
But to me, the risk is he has two more years at $2.75 million, which is real money. That's what you pay third-pairing defensemen. So you better get him to a point where he's playing and he's a regular, whether that's now or certainly by next season. You can't have him be what he's been in Columbus this year, where he's falling out of favor and he's in and out of the lineup and he's healthy scratch. Like, you don't pay $2.75 million to 7th, 8th defensemen. So you're right. They obviously believe they're going to get a lot more out of him than Columbus was. They need to be right about it. Like, if they're wrong and if this is going to be more of a project than they thought they were getting into to rebuild his game, that potentially blocks you from making another move for a different right shot defenseman to round out the right side of your defense.
I wouldn't stress about it too much. Even if he's like, if it doesn't, next year the cap's going up $4 million. The Bruins don't have to deal with the Krejci Bergeron money. They can send him to the minors at 2.75 in the middle of next season. If it's really like, there's so much more flexibility going forward with a guy that's making 2.75 than this season. So I think Listen, I expect him to figure it out. I expect them to have made a good decision, a solid decision. And I think it obvious the dollars, I don't think we'll be thinking about that dollars or those contracts when the cap gets up to 87, 88, 89 million. It's just going to be it's going to feel differently, I think, where the Bruins are the next couple of years. Because don't forget, Lowry's only 800, 900 for the next season anyway. Yeah. So they really should be able to that, it shouldn't hold them up. If they get to the point where that contract is the one holding them up for making deals, they've done things wrong elsewhere on top of it. So,
well, and how do you think it affects their playoff run, right? Like, we talked about forward long-term IR, not sure if he's coming back at all.
Let's hold this for after our final break.
Fine.
Pay the bills.
Yeah. We do have to get Razor's take on expectations for this team down the stretch and into the playoffs.
Love
and
it.
Where he thinks how he thinks they stack up. So you can still jump in. Maybe we'll have time for a phone call. 617-779.
Yeah, a phone call from Fourier.
7937. Yes, we are waiting for Christian Fourier to call.
Do you guys really think he was going to call that guy?
No, I absolutely did not.
Okay, good.
He's
Nick told me he does not know when the time of the show is. So.
And he can't even get a hold. Like,
does
no
he
way.
Know the number for the station?
I was going to say. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, we'll be right back after this. Let's go to Jay in North Carolina, who has this, I think, will launch us into how we're going to finish this show. Thought on a possible playoff series. What's up, Jay?
Yeah, I enjoy your program. You guys stay on point, and I really appreciate that. But anyway, people start panic about the Bruins. Don't forget, their record indicates they're one of the top echelon teams in the league. And I think the finals will be played in the Eastern Conference between the Panthers and the Bruins. I wish the Bruins had gotten a John Wensig-type guy that could flatten the Panthers because they play right on the edge. And I don't like that. And the referees should curtail it, but they're not doing it. But anyway, don't panic about the Bruins. They've got the record to prove that they can go all the way. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Jay.
Jay seems like he's a Bruins fan in Carolina. He's going to show up to that playoff series wearing his Bruins jersey and just roll the dice on what happens with that.
Yeah, so,
taking on all,
you know,
numbers.
I think in terms of like a John Wensing, I mean, Pat Maroon might be about as close to that as you get today. You know, there aren't guys who are going to fight, you know, 30, 40 times a year. Like, I think Bruins Panthers would be second round series. I think what Jay means is that could determine who wins the Eastern Conference. I definitely think Rangers and Hurricanes are going to have a lot to say about that. I think those are two really good teams in the Metro. But, Razor, how do you think the Bruins stack it? Not talking about just record-wise, but what they look like in terms of how they're built for the playoffs. How do the Bruins stack up now?
Well, I think we saw this week especially. Like, when they get that defensive game dialed in, I loved how simple they played this week. I've been screaming about it. I've talked to you guys about it. Simplifying in their own zone. I know the forwards want it on their stick. I know they want to come out of the zone with possession, but there's just times you have to punt it. You just have to punt it. And I thought they did a great job of getting back to that after the Islander debacle last week. I really saw a lot of opportunities where they would typically have forced plays in December and January, maybe last April, and they didn't. And they flipped it out, fought to live another day, got a change, got it in deep, whatever it was, they didn't force too much this week. And it was refreshing to me. If they do that and they have the defensive layers that they had against Toronto and Edmonton over this past week, they're such a hard out. They really are, and that's what I expected. That's what I expect from them. I expect them to be really difficult out. I expect their goalies to make saves, and then the guys make plays. David Pastrnak, Jake DeBrusk, again, go to him when we talk about how good this team is. If he gets on the board, or if he gets scoring 6 points in four games, you said earlier, it's a different group. So I'm of course I'm bullish. I always probably will be. But again, I believe in this group, and I think this week kind of, it really enforced that for me in how they simplified at certain times. And if they can learn to turn that on and off, they're really hard.
Is their top nine good enough?
Yeah, because David Pastrnak's better than everybody else. You know, like, whose top nine's better, I guess, when it comes to a 200-foot game? If, and it has to be an if with it, right? It has to be a DeBrusk going, a Coil going. Like, they have to be chipping in. But I don't see how – I don't think the Toronto Maple Leafs top nine play a 200-foot game like the Bruins do.
I think Carolina, if they get Evgeny Kuznetsov on track –
Oh, yeah.
Hurricanes do.
Yep, that's the answer for sure. And Carolina absolutely has a better top nine on paper. Fortunately, you don't have to see them till May, end of May.
Yeah.
And who knows?
One thing I'm starting to think, and this will be a discussion for future weeks as we head towards the playoffs, I think this Bruins team might end up being able to embrace an underdog mentality. Because I mentioned earlier, they're eighth in Stanley Cup odds now. And I feel like you're not going to find too many people who would say they're the favorites or one of the favorites on paper. I'm not going to say that. You guys know that. I've said, you know, I think they lose to Florida, but that can help you out too. Like, that can do something if you can have that kind of mindset of, hey, you know, people don't believe it. Even though we have such a good record, you know, listen to all these people kind of counting us out.
Well, you've seen, history has told us in the NHL, when these teams have lost first round series that they weren't supposed to, a la Tampa Bay, or the President's Cup that win it the next year, right? It's because of that expectation, that pressure is different. It feels different. They've gone through it and they've learned from it. And that's what we can certainly hope for. We won't know until April 25th, but history has told us that teams have learned from that.
All right.
No, you're going to have to acknowledge the song.
Shakira.
I'm going to have to acknowledge the song. And why did I pick this?
I was going
to
fly right past.
Why did I pick it?
I don't know.
Because I told Scott, we're driving to Montreal on Wednesday. Oh. I told him 5.5 hours of Shakira on loop is what we're going to be doing in the car.
Absolutely not.
So get used to this one.
Enjoy Montreal, gang.
Yeah.
Enjoy Montreal.
We will be back next Sunday, 9 a.m. on St. Patrick's Day. So, guys, bring your corned beef.
Oh.
Christian Arcan coming up next. That'll do it for this week.